Welcome here to this class on teaching sportsmanship. I don't know what you think of when you think of that. Think of sports, probably. You think of teachers getting mad. You think of who knows what you think of. I think of this old, fairly famous story about the rather infamous 1936 Olympics when Jesse Owens, who was the great American runner, sprinter, long jump athlete, he was currently the American world record holder in the long jump, but he was qualifying at the Olympic Games, and he had foot faulted twice already. And what that means is he had run up and his foot had landed on the line as he's trying to launch, and so he's got one more chance to qualify, and the German athlete, jumper, I guess, whatever you call him, walked over to him and said, you can do this here. Just make sure that you plant your foot several inches short of the line. You can jump plenty far enough. Just do that. And so Jesse Owens went back, he lined up, and he launched himself. He took this guy's advice, and he jumped, qualified, and put him in the Olympics. The reason I think that's so interesting is that his rival, whose name was Luz Long, he was the current record holder in Europe. He also knew that the person who would probably beat him was Jesse Owens, and he helped him qualify. That's impressive. And Owens said later, and Owens did go on to win the gold medal, and Long took silver. And Owens said later, you can melt down all the medals and cups I have, and they wouldn't even be a plating on the 24-carat friendship that I have for Luz Long. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, they did go on to have a pretty interesting friendship for quite a while. So, sportsmanship. This is a critical social skill, I believe, that I think is best taught on the playground, and it's how you react and relate to winning and losing. But it's not just about sports, because probably at some age, most people stop playing sports and stop caring, maybe even stop caring about sports quite as well. Although, I don't know, for men, do you ever stop caring about sports? It's always kind of interesting, I think. But really, it's foundational to something else in our life, to learning how to relate to something else. If I say the green-eyed monster, do you know what comes to your mind?
Jealousy.
Jealousy! That's exactly right. And it's an allusion to some, is it a Greek figure? I'm not even sure, but I just knew.
Shakespeare, right?
Is it Shakespeare? That's probably right. So I was going to look it up, but I just know it means jealousy. Do we ever deal with jealousy as adults? I know it's something that children do, but yeah, as adults, I think we really do deal with it. I think the best way to work on it is teaching good sportsmanship to our children, really. Because if we can learn to celebrate other people's successes and be accepting of our own failures and our own successes too. So I think jealousy is a genuine problem. Jealousy, envy, other things. There are three elements of good sportsmanship. I did not get them. This was the elements I was right in the middle of copying and pasting onto the handout, and it crashed, so I didn't get them there. Number one is empathy. Empathy, understanding and appreciating the feelings and perspectives of others. In other words, it's not just sympathy, but we're actually feeling the same thing for them. The second one is respect, treating other people with dignity, showing consideration for their abilities and efforts. The third one is fairness, playing by the rules and accepting both victory and defeat with grace. Okay, so this whole talk, we're going to talk about how we do those things, and hopefully those principles come back in the things that we talk about. So what does poor sportsmanship look like? Can you tell me? What's an example of poor sportsmanship? Anybody? Yes?
These teams are so unfair.
Oh. That's a good one. I didn't write that one down. Excellent. No, none of us have ever said that, though.
Sometimes it's just a jutted out lip with a frown.
Okay, just pouting. Yeah. Any other ideas?
Over-enthusiastic about winning.
Over-enthusiastic about winning. Okay, good. How about refusing to accept a call that goes against you? And cheating, of course. Your foot hit the step. You stepped on the line, but you didn't mean to. I staggered. The wind was just blowing, and just stepped. I didn't mean to. So I probably shouldn't be caught. How many of you have ever seen or done? Maybe you've done this too. You're running as hard as you can, and you get caught in a game. Oh, suddenly you've got a limp. just hurt my foot right there. I couldn't get away. Yeah. You might be fooling yourself. You're not fooling anybody else when you do that. Also, beating yourself up when you make a mistake. Why am I so terrible at this? It's really not good sportsmanship. Cheating in any way, bragging, and having to win at all costs, like Brett said. You know, I thought it was interesting. I looked up just some basic standards for pro sports, and this is kind of a general thing. This is pro sports. So the word sportsmanship actually does come from sports, how you do or play sports. And these are a list of things that can get you thrown out of a professional game, which I have no experience with, so this is just a reading. Taunting an opponent or an official. And say, nah, 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 whatever. Excessive celebration. I remember reading just a little something in the paper years ago. It seems like it was at an Olympics, but I'm not even sure. But it seems like it was because it was an international stage of some kind. And there was a foot race that lasted for a minute or less. I think it was actually quite a bit less. So maybe it was a 200-yard dash or something like that. The American players, runners, won it. And for the next 6 minutes, they pranced and preened and danced around. And the applause that they had from the crowd stopped. And there was a great swelling chorus of boos. Because they actually realized, the crowd actually realized, this is over-celebrating. This is not good sportsmanship. So, excessive celebration. I personally experienced that one time too. Not me celebrating, although I've probably done it. But I was playing soccer one time in Belize. And there was a player. This was a time when a whole bunch of youth from all over Belize came to play together. And there was this one soccer player. He wasn't even that great a player. But he kicked a goal and just tore around the field celebrating and dancing and it was funny the first time. The next time it wasn't that funny. And the third time it was really annoying. I don't even remember if they were winning, but it seemed like he was over-celebrating a bit. Now, I probably was unnecessarily affected by that. Feigning injury is also on their list. They flop and pretend to be fouled badly. Cheating, committing fouls on purpose in order to hurt another player. And blaming teammates or getting mad at teammates. Yelling at officials, easy way to get ejected. They say showboating. I don't know exactly what they mean, but rubbing an opponent's face in it when they're losing or showboating and playing dirty. a foul that's meant to hurt somebody or something like that. Is a good way to get ejected from a game. I remember an incident where a player, a star basketball player, was angry at something his teammate had done, and he took his mouth guard out and threw it on the court. That was all he did. He didn't say anything, and he was ejected immediately. So there's standards in sports, pro sports, for your behavior is all I'm saying. And we should definitely have some too. Okay, I think it's also helpful to have a clear line of what is acceptable and unacceptable. And how do you do that? Somehow communicate that to your students. I've never actually written those things down, but we talk about them at the beginning of the year. And I guess I've taught the same students enough that they tend to know what's acceptable. And there's always a time when we get together and say, hey, you know, we could work on this thing, and so on. Okay, so I'm gonna cover these points, and I hope to have some input from y'all on it too. So the first one is another thing really quickly before I forget. What is the biggest way that we teach sportsmanship?
Modeling just it.
What's that?
Modeling it.
Yes. I don't know how many of you, I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, but maybe you had a teacher who did not display great sportsmanship. Okay? I'm not even going to ask you if you, as a teacher, have not always displayed good sportsmanship either. I know that every year I've done something that was probably, it did not show good sportsmanship. Okay, so we make those mistakes. Here's the sad thing, is that you can be a good sport 95% of the time. And what will your students remember? It's that 5% or 1% or whatever. It's the reality. You live in a glass house. And people who live in glass houses have no right to tell fish stories, is the old saying I like, right? So, I don't know how it relates, it's just we live in glass houses, okay? So, we really need to demonstrate good sportsmanship above and beyond what we think is necessary, I guess. Okay, first point here then is on this list of things, guidelines, and this is, I intended to be just guidelines that I think are helpful in teaching sportsmanship. And hopefully give you opportunity to add things to it. And it's not comprehensive, and you can even disagree. That's fine. The first one is to be courteous to everyone you're playing with and against. So how do we do that? What about trash talking? And we should define trash talking. So can somebody tell me what trash talking is?
Saying things you don't mean literally.
Okay. Saying things you don't mean literally.
Easy out.
Okay, good example. Oh yeah, easy out, easy. Short. Short hit to the pitcher coming up. is that good? Do you allow that at your school? I'm waiting on you here. I can tell that you suspect there's a right and wrong answer here. But actually what I'd like to have is just a little bit of discussion on it, because I know that I've come to teachers' meetings and there's a fair amount of trash talk at the volleyball games. So, do we have different standards here? Yes.
So one of the things that I have thought about, and it's not specifically recess related, but the idea of the whole thing is trash talk. When I'm good friends with somebody, it's kind of both, at least to some extent. But I'm not sure where we should go with it among students or between students and teacher even. Like, it seems to me that they might be a little bit young to be doing too much of it. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that's something I'm not sure how to deal with, because I've had some of that.
Sure. Really, really good there. Anything more on that? Yes.
One thing that kind of just came to me, I never actually stopped and thought about this, but I would say I would tend to draw the line maybe more where it's targeting an individual mm-hmm. versus the entire team. Like if there's one team say, oh, we are gonna get you guys did terrible, like we're gonna get you. But when it actually starts targeting an individual person, I don't know. That's maybe kind of where I would tend to draw the line a little bit, like, no, you know what, like back off.
Thanks, Ray. And the other thing I think about, especially having a really keen sense to how much it's mixed in with actual empathy for the other team. If you have encouragement when the other team fails, but even though you kind of maybe have a little bit of enjoy ribbing going on, as long as it's not done in like a bad tone or like cutting down or whatever, mm-hmm. you know that there's good vibes going back and forth. Mm-hmm. Just a little bit isn't all bad. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
One thing I think that can happen if it becomes between the teacher and the student, especially then you start to lose that respect, authority, structure that needs to be there, because all of a sudden you kind of, the teacher's lowering himself to the level of the students if he allows himself to do it back and forth. Now, if you have a really good, I'm super competitive, so I have to be careful. And I think the level of relationship you have with your students can dictate that a little bit, maybe. There's not one answer that's going to fit every situation, but mm-hmm. I think we should err on the side of not, especially teacher to student. Once you get into order grades, especially, dangerous.
Jane, you had something to say on that?
No, I wasn't actually, I don't know, I wasn't actually going to say something.
Okay. That's good, yes.
I think we could tell when it's done between friends mm-hmm. or done between opponents. Because mm-hmm. like in our school, we had several times that we had to talk to the boys about not just downing the girls. Like they're not, it's kind of, if it's between cliques, you know, we obviously don't want cliques, but sometimes there are manifestations. Mm-hmm. Those are the manifestations of what the clique actually is. So if it's two ninth grade boys that you know there's a good friendship between them and they're kind of, you know, just watch this. Mm-hmm. You know, that builds on the idea of healthy competition. Mm-hmm. Because that's, if we go too far in the other direction, then no points, no competition is no game. Mm-hmm. So there's a balance to be played between healthy competition, what are the points for, mm-hmm. and where that trash talk comes in into that dynamic as a extra.
Sure.
Like I don't think it's a staple to competition. It's an extra that has to be careful. Yeah.
That's good. That's good. You had a comment.
I was reading a teacher quote book at my brother's house for state, and I ran across this quote that I just stopped and looked at it. It said this: "There's nothing that ruins a student more than sarcasm." And I think I can be a fairly sarcastic person, especially in a game. You know, say the opposite of what you mean, maybe not to the hurt. Like the definition of sarcasm is. Mm-hmm. And I think students or young people, I have the lower grades, or middle grades actually, so they take things a lot more literally than what maybe high schoolers can. Mm-hmm. So yeah. That was a real eye-opener for me.
Sure. Okay, that was really good. All of that, I agree with what was said. The comment on, let's see, Austin, you said about being good friends. I think you mentioned it as well. They're good friends, you know, some trash talk or playful banter, however you want to term it. That actually adds a lot to the game. You realize that when we go out to the ball field or whatever sport we're playing, this is one time when we're taking our students and we're intentionally putting them in conflict with each other, right? And they're going to compete strength to strength and skill to skill and also with their minds, you know, play smart, right? So they're, without competition, like was mentioned, we have nothing going on. Without conflict, there's never a story. It's just all, sweetness. You ever read a book where everything is just lovely and everything is just lovely and everything is just lovely and there's nothing there, right? So conflict is what creates a good ball game. So what we need to do, we need to understand that we have to balance that conflict and make sure that we're remaining friends at the end of it. So practically, I think your advice is exactly what I wanted to hear. Make sure that you know your students. Younger students, they really don't do as well with trash talking or that. They just don't do as well. And I don't think it's a great idea for students and teacher to be trash talking. There's been a couple times when it's worked, but most of the time it doesn't work. It erodes that relationship. It's actually not a good thing. Okay? But competition is a good thing. So, you know, what level of competition is good too? That's something we could discuss for a long time. My wife and I went to school together and we were actually somewhat competitive. I remember I was a reasonably fast runner, actually, believe it or not, and we used to do this thing at recess where we would race around the bases. And so there was this young girl that I thought it'd be good to impress by showing how fast I was and race her around the bases. And started out, she agreed finally, and started out and thought, you know, not run too fast, make sure she's not too, heartbroken by how far I was ahead of her at the end, and got around the bases and was heading for home, striding confidently, and she was already there. So it didn't work as well as I thought. Somebody said that my wife and I laugh about how competitive we are, even now, but I laugh more. And maybe that's kind of relate to that just a little bit. So, but competition is a really good thing. And if you ever were in a game where there was just no competition, nobody really cared. It's just kind of not much interest there, not much. That's not great. So, okay.
I could add
yes.
One positive thing that
sure.
Our ninth graders that I saw last year. If there was a fifth grader that was out first,
mm-hmm.
and the two ninth graders were on the opposite teams, like they intentionally played with each other,
mm-hmm.
right? Because they could have hit out to the fifth grader and made a home run.
Sure.
But they intentionally hit to where
mm-hmm.
they were playing with the actual ones that were really good. It wasn't an explicit thing. It was just quietly
mm-hmm.
they were in competition with the particular. So
mm-hmm.
the ones here in school. That is a real sign of a good character.
That's great. That type of thing adds so much spice to the ball game. When I am going to hit the ball. I'm going to hit over Douglas,
yep.
right? And maybe even tell him that, right? That's a good thing. I like that. Especially if you actually do it. It's lovely. But then if he catches it, that's great too. Okay, second point here. Roll along. Don't brag. If you can just teach them not to brag, it doesn't help. If you you don't have to show off either, just play your best. If you're good, people will notice. They actually will notice if you're a good player. Bragging about your exploits is always a great thing to learn not to do. I like that awkward sentence that I put in there intentionally. Learned not to do that, because it's easy to do. You have to learn not to do it, really. Now, this is again, though, something that we do have to balance a little bit, because we don't want to crush the exuberance of our students or our children with their successes. Does that make sense? I like to hear their stories of triumphs. I like to hear them tell me, for example, about how many fish they caught this weekend. I don't think that's bragging. Of course, I love fishing, so I wouldn't. But I like to hear those stories too. And when they tell me how far they hit it in recess or something like that, I like to hear that. So we do have to balance that with just them always telling stories about themselves and their accomplishments and how much better, especially if they're better than somebody else, right? And yet we all have that thing where we want to compete and we want to hit farther, or we want to do better. So it's part of us too. How do we define bragging? We have to consider that. Maybe it's enough to say we know it when we see it in others, but sometimes we just don't see it in ourselves. And if you can teach your students that a little bit. You know, I like to do prison ministry, and recently at a Bible study, there was this gentleman there. He's been coming for a little while. He's very interesting. He often just sits in the corner, doesn't say very much. He's a very heavy fellow. I think he had a praise report a while ago that he was down to 400 pounds. He had been like 475 when I first came in. He was in a wheelchair. So he is making progress, good progress, actually. He's now able to walk by himself. But anyway, he was saying, he gets so tired of people bragging. Just people brag all the time. And I just never brag. All the stories I tell, they're just true. They're not bragging. And I just don't like bragging. And one of the other guys says, hey, what about the time you told us that you dunked the basketball over Michael Jordan one time? And everybody just laughs. And he kind of, yeah. Anyway, wanted to move it on. So it's interesting. Don't brag. If we can teach our students not to brag, that's a really good thing. Tell your opponents, if you can teach your students to tell their opponents, good job or good game after the game. Or I especially like it if there is a great hit, great catch, great play, whatever it is, great spike, if the opposing team, he's like, hey, good hit. It was wonderful. I like to see that. That's unselfish sportsmanship, which I love to see. A story I've told a number of times, but I'm going to tell it again because it sticks in my mind, about one of my students who was very competitive, very athletic, and he just really was honestly too competitive. He would push his student, he would push his teammates, he was just pushy. And I talked to his parents a little bit about it, and I talked to him. He had a good attitude about school, he loved school, loved a good relationship. I said, hey, you know what, you're too pushy here. You're a good athlete, you're great out there on the softball field, but you're pushing them too hard. You need to just back off. When somebody makes a mistake, just tell a good try. Go with that. So, okay, and he's very willing. He's a good student, great student. So, like, the next day we're playing softball, and somebody hits a long fly ball right out center field, and he fielded the ball expertly and threw it to second base, and second baseman missed it, and then they scrambled after it and tried to throw it to the pitcher, and the pitcher missed it. And I mean, the ball was rolling all over the infield. And I remember he came running in from the outfield, just like, guys, I can't do it all by myself. Good try. So he was willing to try, and but. The second one, the fourth point then I have is to learn the rules of the game. Titus, you mentioned about about if we don't have any rules, if we don't have any consequences, if there's no conflict, there's really no game. I actually, I wasn't there at the ball game, but I know some people who were really tired of rules, believe it or not, kind of leaving the, there's some other things going on in church life and whatever. It's just, why do we have to have rules? Let's just play without rules. I mean, who says that catching the pop is an out? And some of the older fellows there are just so exasperated. How can you play softball without rules? Anyway, you have to have rules to play a game and have a good time there, I think, sort of. Learn the rules of the game. The great American philosopher Bill Watterson illustrates how not knowing the rules of the game creates conflict when he has two of his main characters, who you know as Calvin and Hobbes, probably playing baseball. And I remember that where I just had complete empathy with this particular one where Hobbes gets up and hits the ball and it just goes straight up and Calvin rushes forward, ha ha, easy out, and you're not even going to run, oh excellent. And Hobbes just takes the bat and boinks the ball again as it's coming down and hits it off. And Calvin is just, he's nothing but this great big red bulging head saying, you can't do that! And Hobbes says, yes I can, this hit counts for double. That type of thing creates so much frustration if the rules are not, if everybody does not understand the rules, right? Does that make sense? You all have to abide by the same rules, or you get that type of conflict, huh? Yeah. So, the fifth one, listen to your teachers and follow their directions about playing. Some students often, they just want to do something different, and it's a way of manipulating, and let's do it this way. They need to learn to just listen to what the teacher says, and this is how we'll play it today. And it honestly doesn't matter if they change the rules. You know? And by the way, this is one thing, too, that's very important. This is completely off the my subject of sportsmanship. Not completely. But if you play games together with a whole school or something like that, teachers need to have an understanding of the rules. Because when teachers argue, nothing good happens. I'm just saying, nothing good happens. It's memorable, but it's not great. Along the same lines, don't argue with a teacher or umpire if you don't agree with his or her call. And it doesn't really matter if they're wrong, believe it or not. I can remember an incident where it was at a school picnic, and we had an umpire who was not paying attention. And he was not standing, you know, in line with the bases to make calls. He was just kind of lounging in the back. And he called about a ball foul that I saw landed in because we have markers and I'm there every day and I actually know it was actually a fair ball. He called it foul. And I hollered and said, hey, are you making sure about that? Yes, he saw it clearly. Are you sure? Well, yes, he did. I honestly thought he was a little arrogant and dismissive. Well, I didn't want to make a scene, but when we came in, I said, hey, just so you know, we have this marker. And always that, I know. Well, you know what? I felt, and looking back at that, I feel stupid that I even brought it up. It was not helpful. I should just let it go. It did not help anything. Especially if you have an uncle who can't back up. because that's probably exactly the way I am, too. So I've seen it different times at school picnics where you get two very strong personalities. And if you're one of those, find your reverse just as fast as possible. There is this. I don't care what it is. If it's the game-winning run, it really doesn't matter in the end. Okay? It's hard to understand that, but it is true. Don't make excuses. Number seven, don't make excuses or blame a teammate when you lose. This is just something that's just very, very easy to do. We would not have lost if Jason had run out first base like he's supposed to. I have actually seen games like that where a player just pitter-pattered to first base with no enthusiasm and no vision, right? And where there's no vision, the people perish, and he perished at first, right? And that was the end of the game, right there. There was a winning, maybe there was a winning run on third or whatever. It's hard to let that go if you're really competitive. You know what? Might as well let it go. Teach them to let it go. Play fair. Oh, no. Number 8. Be willing to let team members take important positions even if you think you're a better player. Here's something interesting I've thought about just a little bit. Have any of you read the book Outliers? Okay. There's an interesting thing that they talk about with hockey players who are born. Did you know that all the best hockey players are born? When are they born? The best hockey players in the world.
Beginning of the year.
Why?
Because when...
That's a long answer, I know.
Because when they're young people, when they're competing with other people their age, a person born in January versus a person born in December of the same year, the person that's older has a physical advantage.
Yeah.
In younger years, and so all the resources are poured into those people.
Yeah.
Until they actually get to pro level, they have had a lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. Now, I've seen this in action in our Mennonite circles in volleyball. You set up your team with volleyball. You have this young aspiring spiker here. You look around, who is the best setter? You give... And Joe and I were talking about this the other day, and is this the right term to call the girls the setters? And doesn't that seem a little doggy? Is that great? I don't know. Anyway, so it is something to think about. Is this how we set up our teams all the time? We have the best spiker and the person who can set the best. Well, what that does exactly what you're talking about. It gives them all the best opportunities. And actually, maybe we should be giving the best opportunities to a person who's struggling. Just something to think about as we think about, you know, setting up our game. Is it most important to win, or is it most important to learn to play? Something to think about. Number 9, play fair and don't cheat. At the 1932 Olympic Games in Los Angeles, there was a fencing going on, and one of the ladies, I didn't know that ladies fence, but I guess they do, Judy Guinness, was on her way to the gold medal. In fact, I think she was winning, and she stopped and informed the officials that her opponent had touched her with her fencing rod. In other words, had a winning touch, and she forfeited her medal. She was playing fair. It was really impressive. A lot of people noticed that. Number 10 here. I like to see... So, play fair, number 9 is at the point. Number 10, I like to see students learn to cheer on all of their teammates. Not just the ones who are great at hitting if you're playing softball, not just the ones who are terrible at hitting at softball because they need encouragement, but all of them. I've seen this different times where maybe a popular student gets up to hit and there's lots of affirmation going on, or maybe a student who's struggling gets up to hit and there's a fair amount of affirmation. But what about a student who's kind of in the middle? He's not really that popular, and maybe he's got some sort of obnoxious social habits, and there's just silence as he gets up to hit. And you don't really know, he doesn't really know if they're wishing him success. And so he hits, and maybe he hits an out, and there's nothing said. Or maybe he does well, he gets a second or third, and still there's a little affirmation. That's a missed opportunity. If we can somehow communicate that to our students, and we can't do that by pointing out that which one is popular and which one isn't, we say all of them, right? So cheer on, I like to see them cheer on all their teammates. And also with that, and these are sometimes just things that we talk about, learn to be a team player. And how do we learn to be a team player? One really basic thing is work to get better at whatever you're doing. That is something that I think is actually godly, to work harder. It's inspiring. Discipline yourself in the game, whatever it is. What you do matters to the people around you. I've thought about this too, and we've talked in casual conversation, people have said, volleyball is this Mennonite thing. It's like this little, what do we call it, a mating dance a little bit, where we learn to know each other. That can be taken way out of context and all that. But you learn to know people when you work or play with them, right? And see how they relate to conflict and interaction. And actually, volleyball is a good way to get to understand how people respond under pressure, I guess. So, what you do matters to others. You're not an island to yourself. Number 12, we sort of covered that one. Make sure everyone has a chance to play or compete. And number 13 is play hard. One of the great unfortunate signs of bad sportsmanship or poor sportsmanship is somebody who doesn't try. Or maybe they're behind. You're too far behind. There's no point in even trying. There's a famous basketball player I can think of who was extremely competitive, ultra competitive, and whenever he was put in practice on a team, he would just play his heart out. And his coach started to use that. He would put him on this team until they're 20 or 30 points ahead, and then he would sub him out. And then after a while, he would sub him back in on the other team. And it always annoyed him, and he would work on that team. But it was actually inspiring to his teammates. They saw that he is going to work. He's going to win if he can, no matter how tough the opposition is. Okay, and the last one, which I don't think I have on your handout, is that competition is what makes a game interesting and memorable. Okay, and memorable can be good memories or bad memories, right? And unfortunately, we do tend to remember the bad ones. So competition, like every good thing that is given to us, can be used to the wrong, in the wrong way. There are scripture verses too, as we think about sportsmanship, and I think of the verses in Hebrews 12, where it talks about running with patience the race that is set before us. And I really think that sportsmanship is basically that. Learning to run with patience and enduring, doing our best in whatever we have. Okay, thank you for your participation in this class. You're dismissed.